This is a CBC podcast.
Support for delivery of this podcast comes from Chevrolet. At Chevrolet, we bring people together with the things that matter to them most. Visit Chevrolet.gm.ca.
Hi, I'm Delmar Saint-Laurent. You're listening to a podcast of C'est la vie, a program about life in French-speaking Canada. This month on C'est la vie, we want to offer you a different perspective on the reasonable accommodation debate. If you follow the Bouchard-Taylor hearings, you can get the impression that immigrants are unwelcome here and have a hard time fitting in. But in the day-to-day reality, Quebecers of diverse origins generally live together without conflict. And the children of immigrants grow up speaking French and integrating themselves fully in Quebec society. So this month, we're talking to French-speaking Quebecers of diverse origins. They're people who've succeeded and who fit in well in Quebec society. And our guest today is a great example. Rima El-Khoury is a high-profile columnist at the French-language daily La Presse. Her parents immigrated here from the Middle East. Rima was born here. Her husband's from Gaspé. Rima has written extensively about the debate over reasonable accommodation, and I'll be talking with her about that in just a few moments. But first, we asked her to take us somewhere that reminds her of her family's roots. So, she took us to her favorite Syrian restaurant in Montreal.
This is Jean Talon Street in Montreal, in a very multicultural part of Montreal. I'm in front of Le Petit Alep, which is a Syrian restaurant with some cooking from Aleppo. Aleppo is the city of my mother and my grandmother. And whenever I come to this restaurant, Le Petit Alep, it reminds me of my childhood and all the home cooking of my mother and my grandmother. So for me, coming here is coming to get some comfort food right here in Montreal. Let's go inside.
Est-ce que vous aimeriez un menu?
This is muhamara, which is a typical hors d'oeuvre from Aleppo. This is really delicious. It's made with some fleifle, which is a kind of Syrian pepper, breadcrumbs, pomegranate syrup, some pine nuts, some olive oil, and some secret spices that they don't want to tell us about. And what's funny about this is that my mother used to make it all the time, but at home I would never dare to taste it. I just decided that I didn't like it for a long time. And when my husband, when he discovered this plate, he said, "Wow, this is amazing, you have to taste it." And that's how I rediscovered muhamara. And now my husband, he's the one who cooks at home, and he learned the recipe from my grandmother. And so he does that at home from time to time. My husband is very much interested in Middle Eastern food. For him, it's like he just discovered the whole universe. And so he's always asking my mother and my grandmother for some recipes. So he's the one keeping on the Middle Eastern food tradition in the family, which is funny in a way because he comes from Gaspé. He's a Francophone Quebecois who has nothing to do with the Syrian culture. And the culinary tradition in my family is very much my grandmother's realm in a way. She does some excellent Syrian food. My mother, she cooks very well. It's like very good Syrian food. And me, the third generation, I don't cook at all. So I'm very lucky to have a husband who's doing the Middle Eastern cooking for me and who can show our children now what Middle Eastern food is.
How neat is that? Having your husband learn from your grandmother cooking traditions. That's terrific. That's Rima El-Khoury introducing us to Le Petit Alep restaurant in Montreal. Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Now, your husband is the one who put you back in touch with your Arabic culture. How present was that culture when you were growing up?
It was very, very much present in a way, because my parents, they don't come exactly from the same culture. My mother was born in Syria. She has Armenian origins. And my father was born in Senegal. He has his parents are from Lebanon. So both come from a Middle Eastern Christian tradition, but they met here in Montreal. So I grew up hearing Arabic, but not that much because my father's mother tongue is French. So at home, Arabic was not that present. But during family reunions, we would have Middle Eastern food. So the tradition was very much present in the food, maybe in the way my brother and I were brought up in a way.
Like what?
Maybe it's not a specifically Middle Eastern thing, but the obsession of immigrants' family with education and getting a good education, going to university and getting a good job, that was very that was very important for my parents. But it's something I think a lot of children of immigrants
Absolutely.
Share. So education was really, really important. But otherwise, my parents being Arabic Christian, there was no major differences with the society, but they were very, very strict.
Strict parents wanted to make sure that their kids grew up and took advantage of everything the society had to offer.
Yeah.
How did you come to learn Arabic?
Actually, my Arabic is very bad, but I've learned with my mother and my grandmother. So the Arabic I know is an everyday Arabic. When I work as a journalist at La Presse, I had to go to the Middle East to do some report, and I was able to do some interviews in Arabic, but my Arabic is very limited. It's not, I cannot talk about, civil war in Arabic. I don't even know the word civil war in Arabic. I know about the food, the everyday life, but I don't read, I don't write Arabic. But I grew up with that language being around. And now that I work as a journalist and that I see everything going on in the world and how Arabic is important to understand some of the conflicts going on, I would like now to go back to university and learn how to read and write Arabic. But when I was a child, my parents didn't want me to learn Arabic at school.
A lot of children of immigrant parents struggle with their identity sometimes because are they, on the one hand, are they Italian? Are they North American? What was your sense of identity when you were thinking about those issues?
I never struggled with my identity. I know that when I was in school, I just, discovered sometime when I was just opening my boîte à lunch, my lunch bag, I would just discover that, I had something totally different from my other friends. But that was it. I grew up with people coming from all kind of places, Quebecois pure laine and Anglophone, Francophone, people from Haiti, people from the Middle East, whatever. So it was just normal for me. And for a lot of Montrealers, it's not an issue. I went to English University at Concordia for 3 years because I wanted to learn English, because in the French system in Quebec, it's
a challenge.
It's a challenge to learn English. So I did that for 3 years, and it was funny because when I was in the Anglophone community of Montreal, I was perceived as a Francophone. I was the French one, and when I'm among Francophones, I'm the ethnic one, and but that's not, it's just, I think a normal Montrealer complex identities. It's not like if you don't have to choose. That's the good thing about being a Montrealer. You don't have to choose. You can be all of this, and it's not a conflict.
And it's becoming more and more common.
Yeah.
So it's a shared experience. But now, so tell me, how did you get into journalism?
It was really an accident because I wanted to be a teacher. I wanted to teach literature, French literature. So I was doing a master's in actually comparative literature at Université de Montréal. When I applied for La Presse, they had this just summer jobs they would offer to young journalists. For me, it was really just a summer job. I had never thought I could be a journalist. I had never worked as a journalist before. So it was just, I just tried without any expectations, and it worked out. I worked at La Presse for summer, and I realized that this was the job I was dreaming of without knowing it. So I just decided, I finished my master's. years, but I decided to stay in at La Presse. There was I started just by being an editor because I had experience as an editor, as a teaching French and doing some corrections. Yeah. And then there was just an opportunity for a journalist job covering the Rive Sud of Montreal, South Shore. I had never been to South Shore before. I was really
never
a real...
Never crossed the bridge?
Well, almost. So I said, well, yeah, why not? We can start with the South Shore and after that it'll be, you know, Middle East and whatever. So I did that for 2 years, covering South Shore's small stories. And after that I... eventually, it became more and more interesting.
Right. So you started off as a reporter on the South Shore, and you made it to become one of the columnists in the major English language paper, French language paper in North America. That's a pretty big deal. What's it like being a columnist?
It's a great job. I think it's the best job. It's a job where we have a lot of freedom because my job is just to reflect on everyday news, to give my opinion on what's going on. So there is a lot of freedom, but also a lot of responsibility. And I just love it.
Do people comment on your name?
I get a lot of comments on my name, and it's funny because I grew up here in Montreal, and it was never an issue where I was from and my name and my parents' culture or whatever. And now writing in La Presse with an Arabic name, it's just for a lot of people, they see me as a representative of, you know, the Arab community, which I'm not. Or they just think it's okay, you're Muslim, so you're defending the Muslim. I said, no, I'm not a Muslim. I come from a Christian background. You always defend the Lebanese people. No, I'm part a little bit Syrian, a little bit Lebanese, a little bit Armenian. It's not that simple. A lot of readers, they just assume a lot of things just by reading my name. In a way, I find it annoying because sometimes I see, like, if my name was Tremblay or just any neutral Francophone name, I would never get these kind of feedbacks. It's just, it happens every day. There's not a single day where nobody asks me about my name and where I come from. And, you know, a lot of people, they just assume that I'm an immigrant. So how do you find Quebec? Well, I was born here. This is my country. This is the only country I know. So...
I think you wrote in one of your columns, how many generations will it take before it's acceptable for me to be considered as a Quebecois de souche?
Yeah. Sometimes I think about that because a lot of people, they consider me as a stranger. And I don't feel like a stranger. And I live here. I love Montreal. I love Quebec. I would never live in another place. And at the same time, every day some people, they ask me, are you nostalgic about your country? This is my country. So you have to take it with a grain of sel, you know, not to.
Do you ever get a sense that people are learning as a result of the way you're dealing with these issues in your column?
I hope so. I don't know. It's very difficult to know how people will interpret what you write. But I hope that sometimes it can make people change their mind. And sometimes when people, they write sometimes very violent emails, very racist, very aggressive, and I just respond to them. And suddenly they're all, oh, okay, there's a person here. There's, you know, and they sometimes, a lot of time they backtrack and they say, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't think that, I didn't know that. And so I think there is a dialogue going on.
Yeah. Did you really get 280 emails on your Pudding au chômage?
I think it was even more than that. Yeah, it's sometimes amazing. Now in Quebec, with all that debate on what they call
reasonable accommodation,
it's really whenever you write about this topic, you can expect to get, you know, hundreds of emails. People are just passionate about this issue.
Yeah. The reasonable accommodations is the Bouchard-Taylor Commission is a commission that was set up by the government to examine how Quebecers can live together in a more harmonious way. Now, some have argued that it's good to get the negative sentiments out because there has been a lot of negative sentiments about non native or non-pure francophones. But others believe that the hearings make it easier for people to be overtly xenophobic or racist. I'm wondering, what are your thoughts about how this thing has developed?
I think it was a mistake to have this commission the way it is handled now. The fact that, you know, we have an everyday the commission going on in a different town and people coming in and discussing all these issues about reasonable accommodation. I think that a lot of it is going off track and is not representative of the Quebec majority. I don't think the Quebec society is a racist society or more xenophobic than any other society. But having this commission and having people day after day after day repeating this message about immigrants and the way they integrate, and we don't hear that much about the immigrant point of view, it's not always enlightening.
Have you ever thought, if you were to speak to the commission, what you might tell them?
I think that this whole debate is disproportionate, considering the problems that gave birth to this commission. I think there were very minor problems that were over-mediatized, and a lot of people started to become very scared about what's going on in Quebec and scared about their identity and the survival of the French language in North America and their tradition and their culture. But a lot of these reactions were provoked by some media exaggerations.
But I wonder why there was the reaction that we've been living through since last April.
Well, yeah, I would like to know. I think that it tells us more about the majority than about the minority. I think it has to do with the fact that Quebec society is a minority among a vast majority of English-speaking people. And it's just that it's always people are just worried about the survival of the Quebec society. So it doesn't have so much to do with this small guy coming to school with his kirpan.
Yeah.
It's more about this fear of losing your identity.
Do you think that that insecurity, do you think it will ever go away?
It's hard to say. I don't feel this insecurity among younger generations. So in a way, if this is the younger generation comes to lead the society, yes, it will go away, because it's I feel that there is a generational gap, and the people you see at the commission who are very worried about their identity, a lot of them are 60, 70-something, and you don't see people of 20 years old coming and saying that they're afraid to lose their identity. Yeah. They're just, for them, it's just normal to deal with diversity, and it's not an issue.
Yeah, that's a very strong point, because there have now been two extensive public opinion surveys that show that there's a huge difference in the attitudes of young Quebecers as opposed to those of baby boomers and up in terms of dealing with the other. So, you know, maybe there's a room for encouragement there. You know, there's one simple word in the French language that has become a kind of a lightning rod for so many things, and that's the word nous, us. And I think it started back in 1995 at the referendum when Jacques Parizeau said 60% de qui nous sommes ont voté oui, 60% of who we are. And since then, the whole notion of who nous is has been part of the public discourse in this language. That's something that you addressed in one of your columns. What are your thoughts about the nous?
I think that the nous in Quebec, since that the Parizeau Declaration in 1995, that it became a bad word in a sense, because it embodied this notion of ethnic nationalism that younger generation wanted to get rid of. So in a way, when Parizeau said that, it was for the sovereignists, it was like going backward, 20 years backward. now Pauline Marois, who's leading the Parti Québécois, she wants to say, well, we can have this a new nous, and we don't have to be ashamed of that nous, and we should stand for who we are. And I'm not sure it's a good thing, because when you talk about us in yeah. English, automatically what you're saying is that there are some people who are who are the others. And I'm not sure that it's a good thing. I really, when you say, do you consider that you're part of new? I don't mind. I'm just who am I? I'm just who I am, and if it's new or or whatever, it's just creating, I think, false issues and creating division. The objective is to have a kind of cohesion in society, but it's just as the opposite, I think.
Rima, do you ever think of how much Arabic culture you want to pass on to your kids?
That's a painful question in a way, because I'm not passing a lot of Arabic culture to my kids, because my Arabic is not very good, so I don't speak Arabic with my kids. So I know that the language, you know, it will end with my generation, and in a way that I find that it's sad, but in another way, I mean, it's just life. My life is different than my grandparents' life, and I don't think it's you have to hold on to your tradition if life brought you to live something else. Well, why not? Just, you know. But if when they're older, they want to learn Arabic, or, you know, go to my parents' or grandparents' country, I would love to do that with them. But for me, when I went to Syria once with my mother, and I went to Senegal, where my father grew up. And in both places, I felt like a total stranger. I didn't feel like belonging to these places. So I assume that for the third generation, it will also seem like something very much exotic, but at the same time, part of their backgrounds. I think there will always be something left, but that something, you know, won't be exactly the way it was for for our grandparents, but that's just life.
C'est la vie.
C'est la vie.
Rima El-Khoury, thank you very much for spending some time with us.
Thank you.
Rima El-Khoury is a columnist at the French language daily La Presse. So what are your thoughts on the Quebec hearings on reasonable accommodation? If you want to add your voice to the debate, you can reach us at 514-597-4486. That's 514-597-4486. My guest today, Rima El-Khoury, was born here. Elle est née ici. And that's our word of the week, ici, here.
Hi, my name is Anne and I'm in Vancouver. Je vois ça d'ici, I mean, I can just see that. I can just see that from here. Ici means here. So it's something that you would say talking about the future, that I can just see that in the future he's going to break her heart kind of thing. So je vois ça d'ici va lui briser le cœur.
Hi, my name is Elodie and I'm in Vancouver. Je ne suis pas d'ici, I'm not from around here. I'm from France. Je suis de France.
My name is Richard. I'm in Vancouver. Ici means here. Il n'est pas ici. He's not here. If you were to go look for your colleague in his office, and his colleague's a francophone, and she might say, ah, Bill, il n'est pas ici. He's not here.
Hi, my name is Lynn. I'm in Vancouver. Viens ici. Come here. This is something you would say to your little kid who's been doing something a bit bad, and you say, viens ici que je te parle. You know, something like that. So it means, come here, I have a few words to tell you.
I didn't know that person was an eyewitness on my past.
Oh, Bernard, I was going to say that. Hello.
Hi, Joanne Blais. I was going to say, elle n'est pas ici, elle est à Ottawa. Our word lady. Hi, Joanne.
Hi, Bernard.
What were you going to say?
Well, I was just going to say, Bernard, I'm sure you were told that.
Oh, Bernard. Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Yes. Yes.
So cute.
And you could imagine what was coming after that.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
So we should spell it. EC, it's an easy one, so I'll do it. It's I-C-I. EC.
Yes.
Here.
So many usage.
Totally.
And one sentence that I don't like hearing brings back a bad memory for
oh,
me.
Oh, what's that?
Est-ce que ça fait mal ici? Does it hurt here?
Yes.
When I was lying in bed, not feeling well, and I didn't know what was wrong with me, so my husband pushed on my appendix and said, Est-ce que ça fait mal ici? So, and I just jumped, and I said, yes, ça fait mal ici. Okay, I know where we're going. L'hôpital est à 5 minutes d'ici. And it's true. We live, like, our house is 5 minutes from the hospital. And a same minute the same in the show. So that's where I end up that Sunday afternoon.
And
so.
Lucky for you that your husband's a doctor, so that he knew where the appendix was.
Yeah, but, you know, I could say, Bernard, can you picture this? Est-ce que vous voyez ça d'ici? I just had my first child. I was just, like, at home. I had been home for 1 week, and I had to leave to have my appendix out. It was not a pretty scene, right? Vous voyez ça d'ici, Bernard?
Oui,
you know, we use that. Vous imaginez le tableau. Vous voyez d'ici le tableau.
You oh, my goodness.
You can just picture it, right?
Yeah. Je vois ça d'ici. Yeah.
And we have the expression also, ici.
I could also be like, I can see this coming, right? I mean, it's not literally, but when people say that, je vois ça d'ici,
it's
like,
you
oh,
can just
my goodness,
picture
I can see this happening.
Mm-hmm. And we have the expression, ici et là.
Here and there.
Here and there. Yeah. Like this morning, I told my son, I think you need a little haircut. You know, I had my scissors and I said, oh, je pourrais couper ici et là. He said, Mom, last time you did that, you cut too much. Yeah. So, okay, I won't do it. It was very tempting, though.
Yeah.
So ici et là, just here and there. Right?
Yeah, it's not good for a mom to take the hair cutters to a teenage boy, I would
no,
think.
No, it's not a good idea. So he didn't say sors d'ici because he's too polite, but I could just see it in his eyes. Leave me alone.
Sors d'ici, get out of here.
Sors d'ici, exactly.
Yeah.
And Bernard, d'ici peu, shortly.
Yes.
Well, d'ici 6 semaines, right? 6 weeks, what's coming?
Uh-huh.
Christmas.
Yeah.
D'ici
peu.
D'ici peu. And we'll talk to each other next week. Okay. So I could say, d'ici là.
D'ici là.
In the meantime.
I like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. D'ici là, yeah, I
d'ici
like
là,
that.
D'ici là, on vous souhaite un beau bonjour.
That's right. D'ici là, bonne semaine. Yeah. Have a good week.
And you too, Joanne.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Joanne Blais n'est pas ici. Elle est à Ottawa, where she's our word lady. And again, you can reach us at C'est la vie at 514-597-4486. 514-597-4486. Our email address is clv@cbc.ca. Amanda Klang asked people in Vancouver how they use this week's Word of the Week, ici. And Catherine Gombe researched and produced our series on diverse Quebecers. C'est la vie is produced by Alison Cook. I'm Bernard Saint-Laurent saying so long for C'est la vie.
Hi, I'm Jesse Brown. I'm the host of Search Engine, a new CBC radio show that is all about how the internet is changing politics and culture. It's not a gadget show. We don't really care much about technology so much as we care about the effect that technology is having on the world that we live in. All of the surprising and significant and funny stories that we bring you on Search Engine are about things that are happening right now. In the short time that we've been on the air, we've already become the CBC's most popular news podcast in the States. So come find out why. Subscribe to our podcast on CBC's podcasting page or through iTunes.